Yeah, I'd like to open up the informational hearing on, public hearing on Senate Bill 187A. And we have Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum here and her associate.
Cheryl Heemstra.
Thank you. So welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Ellen Rosenblum. I'm the Attorney General for Oregon, and I come to you today in support of Senate Bill 187, the Oregon Student Information Privacy Act, also known as OSIPA. We've all heard it at some point in our lives. Grades follow you forever. As recently as 10 years ago, that didn't mean much more than a manila folder in a drawer. Requesting a transcript was something that you would do by mail. Like so much else, your student record has gone digital. But it's not just about grades. As educational curriculum moves further and further into the cloud,
Good afternoon, Senator Frederick.
More and more of our children's daily activities are being recorded and tracked. Much of this has to do with the rise of educational technology industry, or EdTech. The EdTech industry has already created over $8 billion in annual revenue. EdTech promises not just economic growth, but to be a catalyst for real change in our schools. EdTech brings high-tech skills into the classroom via an expanded, interactive, multimedia curriculum that allows for a level of interactivity impossible a generation ago. Some analysts predict that the EdTech industry may ultimately drive at least $300 billion a year in added economic growth in the United States. That's billion. But this comes with a cost. In the world of EdTech, information is meticulously tracked. Students are tracked as they watch videos, take quizzes, and read books on their tablets. This monitoring continues after the school day. Homework assignments, academic progress, physical location, and web browsing habits are all tracked and recorded. At some schools, students are given bracelets which monitor their lap time in PE and how they spend their time on the playground. Consider Newton, a startup company specializing in mining educational data. Their CEO, Jose Ferreira, recently gave a talk explaining how much information can be mined out of a typical student's school day. Data can be measured in data points. So when you search for where to buy chocolate ice cream at 11 p.m. on Google, that gives Google one data point about you. They now know you like to eat chocolate ice cream late at night. When you rent a movie on Netflix, that's another. Ferreira says that a typical interaction between a consumer and Google, Facebook, or Amazon will result in somewhere between 1 and 10 data points. A student going to school in the world of ed tech, 1 million. It's a staggering number of data points. But when student data collection spills out of the textbook and starts soaking up data of other kinds, the potential for exploitation is very real. Very quickly, corporations know what that student likes for breakfast, their favorite musical artist, and their favorite soft drink, not to mention more conventional information like where they live, what their parents do for a living, their age, their race, gender, etc. Some of the collected information is protected by FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which passed into law in 1974. But as you might expect from a statute that's as old as the floppy disk, FERPA is not prepared for the age of big data. FERPA prohibits the disclosures of standardized test scores, disciplinary history, and other official student records. But it's silent on the bounty of data generated by a student's learning styles or personal interests, as I just mentioned. This data has real commercial value. It can be used to target ads to the students and their families, or to build profiles with the potential to follow them from K through 12 and beyond. On at least one occasion, an ed tech firm faced with the prospect of bankruptcy simply bundled up the data they'd gathered on students and sold it off on the private market. This is where Senate Bill 187 comes in. It's based on California's Student Online Personal Information Protection Act, or SOPIPA. I know. Senate Bill 187 introduces the Oregon Student Information Privacy, Protection Act, or OSIPA. And at its core, OSIPA is very simple. This bill does not limit the legitimate use of students' data by schools or teachers, but it should be the policy of Oregon that the information you gather from students should be used for their educational benefit and for nothing else, period. OSIPA does this by making explicit that third-party vendors who contract with a school cannot sell student data and cannot use the data for targeted advertisings or to create a profile on students for a non-educational purpose. Third-party vendors can use student data for the development and improvement of educational resources only if that data has been de-identified, meaning that the data no longer identifies individual students. The California bill, which inspired SOPIPA, passed unanimously and with broad bipartisan support. New versions of this legislative concept are being considered in at least 12 different states. This concept makes sense for Oregon. Our school children should have every opportunity to use the new library of educational websites and apps without fear that their information will be exploited for commercial purposes. Parents should be able to send their children to school without worrying about the creation of a record that will follow their child for the rest of their lives. But I also need to issue a brief word of caution. Some have said that the responsibility for protecting the privacy of students should fall on students, or that parents should be given the opportunity to opt out or waive the protections provided by this statutory provision if they so choose. The problem with this approach is the problem we all have when our phones tell us we need to install a new security update or we install a new app. The screen that pops up showing a long licensing agreement, a privacy statement, and other information that the vast majority of us will never read. And even if the privacy statement is read, what choice will a parent or student really have? It is too easy to imagine a world where opting out will exclude a child from significant educational opportunities, which should be available without the forfeiture of personal privacy. I question the wisdom of allowing students as young as 12, which some have suggested, the ability to waive all protections to their private student records with the simple click of a mouse. For that reason, I believe it is absolutely crucial to the value of this proposal that no opt-out loophole be included. It is simply unfair to shift this very heavy burden to parents or students. So I want to close by thanking the broad coalition of teachers, parents, school districts, privacy advocates, and industry partners who have joined with me in assembling this important legislation. I would like to extend a special note of thanks to the Department of Education for their valuable technical insights and to Representative Lou Frederick for his leadership and demonstrated commitment to student privacy issues. Thank you for your time, and we are open to questions. As I mentioned, I have with me Cheryl Heemstra, who's been working on this issue.
Okay, and actually, what I'm going to do, one thing I forgot to, was to read the summary of the bill.
Oh, sure.
And have Richard do that. So we're going to do that and then continue with the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 187A enacts the Oregon Student Information Protection Act, SIPA. It prohibits the operator of websites, web services, or applications designed for kindergarten through grade 12 educational purposes from engaging in targeted advertising, amassing student profiles, selling student information, or disclosing the covered information. It allows limited disclosure of information made to further school purposes, to comply with legal and regulatory requirements, to participate in judicial proceedings, and to protect safety of the user and the integrity of the application. It requires the operator to implement and retain reasonable security procedures and practices, and to delete student information within a reasonable time of the request of a request to delete. It allows disclosure of covered student information if required by law for legitimate research purposes or if made to a state or local education agency. It specifies circumstances for the disclosure of the de-identified information, and it makes a violation of the act an unlawful business practice enforceable by the Attorney General. It becomes effective July 1, 2016.
Thank you. And I understand there are some amendments that might be coming forward. So, Thank you very much.
Are we holding questions till the end?
No, we haven't finished yet. We just did this in the middle, so.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice and simply here to answer any questions if you have them.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, Representative McLean and Representative Hack.
We're talking about devices that belong to the school district or belong to the school, and we're talking about like school emails and things of that nature. How does this relate to like cell phones or smartphones that might belong to the student if they're in the student, you know, basically in the school atmosphere?
Right. Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, members of the committee. It would relate to them if there was an app that was tied to the phone that was through one of these contracts with an ed tech company, I believe. Sure. And I will also, if with your permission, call upon my colleague to elaborate if need be.
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, yes. Basically, it's just as long as it falls under the definition of operator as defined
in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. It sounds as though the consent issue may be a problem that you're having. And if so, if it's an educational content, which the more the better in my view, if there's more opportunity for educational opportunities for kids, why would we want to take that choice away from parents and students to be able to have the opportunity for additional educational opportunity? Why is that an issue? Can you help me kind of understand that?
Sure. If I might, I'm going to call on Ms. Heemstra to respond, and then I'll add to anything she wishes me to.
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, great question. So under the bill, purposes for K through 12 purposes, those are allowed. So if anything does further the school purpose, allowed under the bill, and it's happy, we're happy to accommodate that. What's at stake with the opt-out? Basically, it's what would pop up on a screen would be, here's the privacy policy, click through, and do you want this next thing? I don't know how many apps you've updated, but it doesn't really seem like much of a choice when that starts happening. It's either you want this app and you give away your privacy protections, or you don't get the educational opportunity at all. So we're worried about the balance there. And as I mentioned in the bill, we are allowing, as long as the app is for educational purposes, it is allowable.
Follow up,
please.
So who will determine whether or not it's appropriate educationally or not? I mean, if you're basically saying you don't have the option, then you're taking away the choice of the parent and the child to decide whether or not it's educational or not. Let's say it happens to be an opportunity for a science summer camps or something in that regard, and I believe as a parent that is an opportunity that I would like my child to have, yet you don't deem that's an appropriate. You're taking away the choice of the parent and the child to determine what's educationally appropriate or not. Why would we not just let them decide? What is it? I guess I'm just having a hard time understanding why it really matters. Why do we care if there's an opportunity out there for students and parents? Why not just let them choose? Why do we have to narrow it?
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack. So the bill does not prohibit ed tech companies from approaching parents. What it is prohibiting is using student information to target that. So if they're giving a general advertisement out for a camp, that's completely fine. We're just saying we want to put a fence around the student information that's being collected while in school to then serve ads upon that information. So sending out an advertisement for a camp, completely fine.
So just a follow-up. Mm-hmm. So if it's clear and if it's clear that it's an educational content, then there is absolutely no reason why they wouldn't be able to access that.
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, as long as it falls under the definition of K-12 purpose.
And will we have an amendment that follows this, I'm hoping?
I know that there are going to be some amendments that are proffered. I don't know if they're going to be discussed today. Yes, they are. because I didn't see you guys on the list, but yes, there are.
Great, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Peluso.
Yeah, thank you, and good afternoon. Could you just give me some examples of the data you're talking about, a student's data that would be protected? What? Give me some examples of what that is.
Sure, Chair Doherty, Representative Peluso, and I might tag the folks from the Department of Education who might be able to get a little more on-the-ground perspective here. But say a student is studying triangles, and the ed tech provider is tracking all their answers, and say maybe they have a difficulty with isosceles triangles. You know, that's the sort of information that would be protected here. Also, and this is on page 2 of the bill, it kind of goes through what is covered. So discipline records, test results, that sort of thing would also be covered under the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions to this panel? Representative McLean.
Just because you guys are the base knowledge, right? I want to make sure I've got the base knowledge down. There's two aspects of this protection. The first aspect is protecting the child's information, like the information that was just being described. Test scores, they had trouble with this, they had trouble with that. Personal information, what they are doing, you know, during an educational process. And then the second part of it is what the app can do in the way of other things like advertisement to the child in the class setting or in the school setting. Would you agree that's the base knowledge? Is that what we're trying to deal with, is what they can or cannot do in the way of additional advertisement or additional experiences that may or may not be appropriate for what the student is doing right now in class with that device?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. A question about if a student is having a particular problem, demonstrating an issue with triangles or whatever, what could happen if things are left the way they are? What could happen with that kind of information? How would that student be approached, I guess?
Chair Doherty, Representative Wilson, and I'm going to refer to our folks from the Department of Education to kind of fill this in. But basically, what could happen from that point is they might be served some more apps related to math or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that could lead them to something that's been approved by a teacher or maybe not, depending on how things are set up. So what we're concerned with here is just sort of the hole in that fence of we wanted a, sort of a fence there to say, okay, at some point we've got to stop tracking when we're leaving the educational purpose.
Okay.
Okay. And we'll make sure that that's covered by the Department of Ed when they come up to testify. Representative Reardon.
Thank you. I just want to make sure, does anything in this bill preclude the, educational process in a way that serves the student? In other words, you need to be able to, have that feedback. You need to have some certain information about the student and how they performed interactively with the application. So is there anything that in this bill that prevents that educational process from occurring?
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, we did put in an amendment on the Senate side on this bill to make sure that was not precluded, that the functionality would still be working as it needed to for the educational purposes.
Okay. And can you tell me the amendment?
Sure. That was, I believe, that the -3 amendments, and that was on basically just adding to the definition of operator, to the extent that the site, service, or application is operating in that capacity. Some of the disclosures that are allowed for the functionality and regarding the legal process, and for adaptive learning and customized student learning purposes.
Okay, great. Thank
you.
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, I believe that amendment was incorporated into the A and gross measure, so it appears in the measure text that the committee is considering.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and then we'd also actually, we don't do this all the time, but I'd like to welcome the students from Roosevelt High School. Yes, we know who you are, even this without computers. But anyway, this is the senior inquiry class from Roosevelt High School, so welcome. This is Attorney General Ellen Rosenbaum, I think. Rosenblum, I don't think that she, you guys were here when you introduced her. So anyway, thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, I will apologize. I was talking to them. That's why I was late.
I'm not quite sure an excuse.
I needed an excuse from you guys, please. Just a note. That would have
was
been
he talking to you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's good enough. I believe you. No note, but that's good enough. Okay. Next, we're going to have Ben Tate from the Oregon Department of Ed. Anybody else or just him? Yeah. And we also have Megan Schrader, Betty Reynolds, and Lisa Schultz signed up. So if you are with this gentleman, you can come up. If not, we will just hear from Ben. Thank you.
Representative Doherty, chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Ben Tate. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Department of Education. I have been working with the Department of Justice on this bill since its inception and fully support where this is going. I think over the last 5 years, we've seen a dramatic explosion and advancement in our technology. Just mobile devices, the advent of that, and how prevalent they've become is something we would not have guessed at this point 5 years ago. Our policy has not kept pace. FERPA, as the Attorney General said, was made many, many, many years ago when the students back behind me were not even a twinkle in their parents' eye. Mm-hmm. And so we cannot expect that that would protect the information that we now have available. You have my written testimony. I won't belabor the point, but there are two issues that I'd like to raise, and actually it gets at some of the questions that that you guys had for the Department of Justice. So the two issues that I think are still outstanding are what I call recommendation engines and parental consent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we make the distinction between the two because they have a very different impact on the educational process. So when I say recommendation engine, it's the ability of the website or the applications to provide additional materials given what you are currently studying. So if you are reading Huckleberry Finn, it'll say, here are some resources on Tom Sawyer or other things that Mark Twain has written. This is a very important feature that district personnel do utilize a lot and would like to continue to utilize because it does help them to provide additional materials to students. This bill does not prohibit that functionality. It does put a few additional measures around that so that those recommendations are based only on single search criteria or what the student is working on at the time. There are prohibitions that say that you cannot build a profile over time and that you cannot use the personal information of the student to develop those recommendations. So you're not going to be using a student's ethnicity as part of the recommendation. You will just be using what they are currently studying. And I think that is an important distinction to make. The parental consent piece, I think the important question that we need to ask is what is the value to the educational process? I don't think anyone here would say that parents don't have the right to consent to disclose information about themselves or their students. What we're saying is that school districts and school personnel as part of the educational process should not be doing that without some thoughtfulness to how it impacts the educational process. So the bill is intended to protect those contracts that school districts are making for the learning process. So we wouldn't be using any applications or anything that would disclose information as part of the teaching. If parents do choose to do that outside of the classroom, that is perfectly fine. Nothing in this bill would prohibit that. I think that is, as you guys consider the amendments, I think the important question to ask is what is disclosing this information or giving parents the ability to disclose this information? How does that add to the educational process? And that would be the only point I would make. To the questions that were raised earlier, I'll make sure I get all of these and let me know if I miss any. I think there was a question raised around the types of student data. I think DOJ did a good job of naming that in terms of the types of things that the students are working on. But I do think that it's important also to say one of the issues that has come up that FERPA has been a little squishy on is when a private company goes bankrupt, what happens to that information? Currently, there are plenty of cases, Representative Frederick knows this very well, where that information is deemed an asset of the company and is sold. What this bill would do would be to say that information can only live the life of the contract and a reasonable length afterwards for that company to destroy it. So that information would no longer be considered an asset of the company, but an asset of the school district that's having the contract and would be treated with a little bit more protection. So when we talk about data, we're not just talking about what the students are working on in terms of their academic progress, but we're also talking about adding protections to all of their data, all of their personally identifiable data, name, address, ethnicity, all of those things that we currently capture. And I think there was also a question asked about what happens currently and what is the risk. I think the targeted advertising is one of the big things that we are after to make sure that that personally identifiable information isn't used to generate additional ads that would come to the students in the classroom while conducting things that the district has asked them to do. That is kind of one of the big things. In addition to some of these additional protections, a lot of this language does protect information beyond what FERPA does. So FERPA says that you're allowed to disclose what they call directory information, name, address. This bill does not make that distinction. So in the contracts with these companies, they're saying that all personally identifiable information needs to be protected. So there is an additional level of protection here for the direct contract between the district and the company that does not exist right now in FERPA. And I think it's an important distinction because these companies, the intent is good. I do not question that. But there are so many things. We've read so many, when they go bankrupt or something happens, that I think it's good for us to have some additional protection that does not currently exist. If I've missed anything else, or if you have any other questions, please let me know.
Hey, any other questions? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Could you describe for me an ed tech firm, what it looks like, how it operates?
Sure. Representative Doherty, Representative Wilson. So a good ed tech firm will have additional applications, on specific content areas. So it'll be math curriculum that they have attempted to convey in a different manner. So it's not just here are problems, fill them out, but they'll kind of put a story around it or make it more interactive or attempt to have the kids problem solve in different ways. So the beauty of EdTech is that it makes material accessible to students in a medium that they're a little bit more used to in their average life. Most kids don't read books anymore. It's all virtual. And so it allows them to access things in a way that's more familiar. And it attempts to adapt and learn the learning style so that you're presenting material in different ways for kids. And so I think I'm personally a big advocate for ed tech, being into technology and working for the Department of Education, you would assume that. There's so many benefits here. I think we just need to make sure that policy side is in step.
Just follow up, if I might. So I take it then that the school districts contract with ed tech firms, and usually in some kind of business relationship, both parties have expectations in that relationship. So I guess a question that I would have is this going to fundamentally change the relationship that school districts have with ed tech firms when school districts begin to tell ed tech firms how to do their business?
Representative Dooley, Representative Wilson, I don't think so, because I don't think it will get to the point where we're telling them how to do their business. There will definitely be a learning curve as both sides adapt to what the legislation requires. The bill does not prohibit these companies from making statements like 62% of our kids that have taken this showed growth in the first 90 days. We're still allowing them to use that data in an aggregate form to talk about the success of the program. So we're not completely closing the door for them to use the data that they gather to refine and make improvements and to help sell their product. The piece that we're just making sure of is they can't say, Johnny has problems with this specific thing. Just making sure that we're making the distinction between appropriate disclosure and inappropriate disclosure.
Okay, Representative McLean, then Representative Ann.
I have a follow-up to that, because your example with Johnny. First of all, when you get it down to the actual individual doing the activity or whatever, well, then does, I mean, in present-day form, Johnny is not doing well or is doing extraordinarily well on whatever task he's doing or whatever program he's using. So then would with present-day law, would it allow them to then sell that information to third parties? And those third parties may not be ed techs. They may be other folks. And then those other folks might give advertisements and or programs or processes or utilize that information about Johnny to do something or to expose Johnny to something.
Representative Doherty, Representative McLean, thank you. Current FERPA does protect the disclosure of that information, so the company technically would not be allowed to sell it to another company. What could happen is if there's a business relationship where they said, well, you give us those ads and we'll take those ads and target it based. So they're not disclosing the information, but they're still passing through and providing that. That would not violate current FERPA law.
Thanks.
Okay. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little bit to start in that regard as well. What are other states doing? It seems like we're really going to the extreme, and my concern, too, would be that these ed tech firms aren't going to want to work with Oregon, and then our students are going to be at a disadvantage as far as what we can even offer them. Because let's face it, I mean, they are protected as far as, you know, the bad advertisements that they can be, their information can be sold and given to. But that's kind of part of doing business. And so if we take the incentive away, who's going to be left to want to do business with Oregon? And what are other states doing? Do you know?
Representative Doherty, Representative Hack. Yeah, this legislation is based on California's bill, and so California has already passed this without, my understanding is without any additional language around parental consent or recommendation engines. There are, I think the Attorney General mentioned, 12 other states that are currently in the process of doing legislation. Washington, I know, is one of them. They have variations. So some of those bills do have parental consent in them, and I believe some do not. So it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of how states are approaching that particular issue. But I think nationally, the focus on student data privacy is very high. This particular bill or way of approaching it is limited at this point to that collection of 12 to 14 states. But a lot of other states have passed a lot more restrictive bills around student data privacy. A lot of the states in the South and up in the Northeast have passed laws that really prohibit the Department of Education and districts, the focus then being on us versus the vendor community in terms of the disclosure of data.
My understanding is 6 states have consent.
Okay.
And your understanding is there's 12?
Well, there are 12 states that are considering the bill.
Okay.
I don't know how many exactly have the consent.
Just a couple of follow-ups, if I might. Can you tell us where in the bill it talks about the recommended search engines?
So it doesn't, that language will not appear directly in the bill. What appears in the bill is that they're allowed to use it for K-12 school purposes, and that targeted, the definition of targeted advertising includes language that says as long as it's not for those recommended K-12 purposes. So our interpretation right now of that is that a recommendation engine would serve for K-12 school purposes and thus would be covered by the existing language. So it's not called out specifically, but it's my belief that the way that is currently worded would allow that functionality.
Might need to be in the amendment. One last question, if I might. Mm-hmm. So when we talked about the parental consent and the issues relative to that, I know when I register my kids for school, we have to sign a consent for them to be able to utilize the computer systems and the data and all of that. Would it be fair to say that since that's a burden that is placed on teachers to decide some of those things, that may be a time to take that burden away from them at that point, and the parental consent is given at the time of registration for these types of things, same time that you do the data consent? And that way it's covered at that particular time. Parents are notified at the time of registration.
Yeah, Representative Doherty, Representative Hack. You could, and if you were going to do it, that would be the time to do it. I guess my fear would be making sure that all of the parents understood the full ramifications of what that meant. And That's why I posed the question of what does the disclosure of that data do in terms of the educational process? I think if you you would have to make a cognizant argument about that in order to allow parents to understand what they're gaining by allowing that consent.
I think at that point, parents have to take the responsibility, though, and the onus of being a parent, and you know, they have to read the documents put in front of them, and they've got to be able to understand and take responsibility to do that. I would be a proponent of having it at registration. Okay. But thank you. I appreciate all your answers and your time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, one final question, Mr. Tate. A lot of times the contracts themselves will contain provisions allowing, and just let me use the term data mining. So I guess a question I would have about this is that will this change the nature of the contracts that exist between ed tech firms and the school districts, in that I would gather at this point in time that every contract probably has some reference to being able to use the information that they acquire by helping the kids. Is it going to affect contract law, anything like that?
Representative Doherty, Representative Wilson, you know, I'd have to defer a little bit to DOJ in terms of the contract law. I believe in our conversations, the reason I like this bill a great deal is because it preserves the root nature of these contracts, which is the educational tools themselves. So nothing that we're saying or doing should impact negatively the use of these tools in the classroom. It really is then just defining what the responsibilities are around the data that's gathered and how that data is used. I think there is going to be a learning curve for districts and ed tech firms to understand how they incorporate that into those contracts. But I think the intent of these contracts will not be harmed. The use of those tools will not be negatively impacted.
Okay. Actually, I have a couple of questions. With the disclosure of information, how I see this is that, I mean, you know, all the kids, especially whether elementary or high school, and I think maybe more in elementary, they have their iPads, and they might be doing a reading project, for example, and maybe the reading project that they're doing in tandem with social studies is on maybe the Chinook Indians. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they'll be reading about Chinook Indians in reading class. They'll be going through and they'll be writing about the Chinook Indians for writing class, and then for history they'll be doing something like this. And so to me it's and it's all on the iPads, and so that's a contract that the school district that I represent has with whatever curriculum company they have purchased that from. And so to me, it's the whole idea that all of a sudden with this coming up on the iPads would not be something like an advertisement for Chinook Winds Casino. That's going up, you know, on the far left, but going through and coming up with something that is something that you, and I'm not going to say purchase, but something that puts something in the kids' minds that necessarily is not academic.
Correct.
And so that's the whole purpose behind some of this.
That is,
and
yes.
Okay, that's number one. And so with these companies, I mean, they know that when they start out, right? I mean, their whole purpose is to, I won't say sell curriculum, but it is kind of selling curriculum. And so, you know, that was it. And my last question, this might be more for the DOJ, because I know in the bill it goes through and talks about a person engages in an unlawful practice if they do blah, blah, blah. And so if something, well, they more do more than blah, 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 but what is written in here. And I assume that there's a legal procedure if somebody violates this, if you could come on up again. And along with that is the idea of, I mean, who reports them? Like if company B is doing something wrong, does the school district report them? Does the child, you know, what's that process, the enforcement process?
Chair Dory, yes, this brings the violations under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, which is our main consumer protection law. This is great, first of all, because it doesn't put the onus on the school to get all the contracts right. Some of our schools struggle to have a reliable internet connection. Going through the nuance of contract law has been challenging for some. And as far as the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, how that works is we would receive a complaint. We receive complaints from your average consumer. We receive them. We could receive them from the Department of Education, a school district, whomever, and then take our normal course through the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. So we would send an investigative demand to learn more about what's been going on, and then go through the process. We can ask the court for up to $25,000 per violation of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, Representative Wilson?
Sure. If I could ask a question about the practical impact on Oregon that has come from California passing a law that looks like this. What comfort would Oregon take, or should Oregon take, by the passage of legislation like this in California?
Sure, Deputy Representative Wilson. So PIPA, the California law, I believe, is going into effect January 2016. Mm. So they would have some lead time before us and would, I think, be able to, obviously, that's the most populous state in the nation. So EdTech folks are going to figure things out down there first.
Okay, so we don't yet know how it's worked because it hasn't gone into effect yet.
Deputy Representative, correct.
Okay, any other questions, Mr. Tate? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, the next people we have, Megan Schrader, Betty Reynolds, and Lisa Schultz. Welcome.
Thank you.
Whoever wants to start.
Okay. I'll start if that's all right. Representative Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Megan Schrader. I am the executive director of TechNet in the Northwest region. Just by way of background, TechNet is an organization representing over 70 of the nation's leading companies in the fields of information technology, e-commerce, internet media, venture finance, and green tech. We work together with our members to promote the growth of technology-led innovation around the country. Our members very much appreciate the Attorney General's office in engaging us in Senate Bill 187, and we support the goal of this bill to create a law in Oregon that protects students' safety and privacy without compromising their ability to learn in the manner that is uniquely suited for them. We understand that the Attorney General's office is looking for a bill that brings uniformity across states. We also appreciate that goal, but would like to make a couple of clarifications. First, no state has passed the California bill as is. There are six states, including Washington State, Colorado, Maryland, Georgia, Arkansas, and Virginia, that have passed bills similar to the California law, but that also include a definition and allowance for recommendation engines and consent. There is one bill that was passed that doesn't include those, and no bills are currently moving that don't have that language in them. So we have some amendments drafted. They're still being just their final refinements, but I would like to briefly describe what some of those amendments are. The first would be to have an amendment that would allow the limited use of educational recommendation engines. So the previous speaker spoke about how they felt that there was an allowance already for recommendation engines, and we would say that's true in general in the general public websites. So if a student is directed to the BBC and the BBC already has an ad on there, that is permitted. But what we recognize is that recommendation engines and many of these definitions in these bills are very complex. We would like to further refine that to allow a clear exemption to provide for recommendation engines within a school provider's internet website, mobile application, or online service. An example of what the content might be recommended would be I should clarify that these recommendations would be based off of a single search query. So this isn't tracked over time. It's based off of one search query. So the example would be if a student is searching for Hamlet or works by Shakespeare, that also Macbeth would be recommended or Romeo and Juliet, so that that student is exposed to other similar types of educational content. And we think that that is not currently allowed for within the bill. No tracking, again, is done within an educational recommendation search engine. And there's also language that we've inserted that would not allow for any part of that recommendation to be paid for in part or in whole. So there's no way that it could be based off of advertising. It would be based off of adaptive learning and or what's best for that student in what they're searching for. The second amendment we are proposing would be to refine some key definitions. There's one that would avoid and clarify that the bill's restrictions are limited to students and not the general public. There's just a little bit of a tweak that needs to happen with some language there. But we also think that there would be some ambiguous terms that could be clarified without imposing on any student's privacy, and allow if users aren't tracked and no information about them is retained when responding to search requests. And we also think that the proposed amendment would exempt only activities that are plainly not treated as targeted advertising under the Children's Online Privacy and Protection Act, which we think is a very strong children's privacy law. Finally, there's one more amendment which would support we would ask that you support us to be able to gain consent to disclose covered information for limited educational purposes. The way the bill is drafted, and we may need to have further discussions with the Attorney General's office, but we read it as not allowing, a university to have an ad advertising for a college scholarship. And we think that there are some clarifications that are needed to provide students with the best opportunities for internships, summer camps, as you mentioned, or scholarships. We believe that students over the age of 12 and parents should be allowed to give consent to see education-related ads, and that is exactly what our amendment intends to do. We don't want to bury that in a terms of service agreement, but to make it clear and conspicuous consent that they're allowed to see those ads. Without the amendment, we also think that a student may not be able to take the work product that was created on an educational platform. So, for example, if a student wants to use an image that they created from Flickr or from an Instagram account, but those were created under school or educational platforms, we fear that they would not be able to use those on something like a college application or an internship portfolio. So we think that it would be very beneficial for students to be able to take that work with them, and that's parents and students should be able to give that consent to not only receive those ads, but for that information to be used and shared. The existing laws that govern educational services, FERPA and the Children's Online Protection Act, were intended to ensure that parents have choices to foster the growth in the quantity and quality of services available. And the touchstone of those laws is consent. So we believe that the regulation of the educational opportunities available to students should be guided by that same principle. Finally, I would close with, we know there's been a sort of an opposition letter circulated from Common Sense Media. We do have some responses to that. We feel like a lot of those claims are disingenuous, and we'll be getting those out to your offices very shortly. So thank you. We really appreciate being able to comment on this, and we look forward to working with you all on figuring out how to make the bill, a workable solution to protect student privacy, but also be able to provide the best sort of educational services possible.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Ms. Reynolds?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Betty Reynolds. I'm Vice President for Legislation for Oregon PTA, and I had the pleasure of serving on the Student Data Privacy Work Group, which was convened by the Oregon Education Investment Board and Representative Frederick. Oregon PTA appreciated that its voice was heard in this issue that's so important to parents and to students. Oregon PTA and National PTA support safeguarding student data through such provisions as third-party vendor restrictions on marketing to kids by the use of data collected, selling data, or compiling profiles. We believe that the restrictions in Senate Bill 187A provide those safeguards to protect children and youth. We encourage your support, and we thank you as committee members, Representative Frederick, the Attorney General, and the Oregon Education Investment Board for your leadership in this issue that's so important to kids and to parents. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Schultz.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty.
You can actually sit back.
Oh, okay.
Good afternoon. Sit back and relax.
Chair Doherty, committee members, my name is Lisa Schultz. I'm a former member of the Beaverton School Board and resident of Washington County. I've appeared before you before several times on the issue of student data privacy. And first, I'd like to thank the Attorney General for putting this legislation forward. It was thrilling when I first read it and the her work to copy California's So People legislation was thrilling to me in the beginning. So, I'm going to take a second here. I'm adding new information that's come up. So, I initially supported this bill in its dash with the dash one amendment that appeared in the Senate Education Committee. With the dash three amendment, and it is a difficult bill to read, and it sort of speaks to the nature of the difficulty of data privacy. If you've read the bill, you see that, at least if you're like me and you're not an attorney, you kind of go, what does that really mean? Why did they change this wording to that? What are these subtle changes that appeared to be subtle? And as I did more research and I looked at the changes between the dash one and the dash three amendment, it became clear that it was a weakening of the California bill. And I had lots of questions. And my first question was, why didn't we see a discussion of this on the Senate side? So I'm hoping that I already see in this side of the legislature that you all are asking some really great questions. And I appreciate that. So my first question is, the California bill has been celebrated. So why are we weakening that California bill, especially since it received a lot of national scrutiny? If you watched those hearings, people came from all over the United States, experts both in ed tech and legally, and they crafted this bill. So why are we weakening this bill with the definitions of operator and K-12 purposes and the expansion of allowing the distribution to third parties? So that would be my first question. And then just lastly, to finish up, because I included that in my written testimony, is there's been a lot of questions or comments by committee members on consent. As a parent, I have to tell you, I just watched a hearing or a seminar on Friday at Fordham Law School, where they brought in all these privacy experts from all over the country. And one of the biggest concerns about privacy is that parents can't read those notifications. We don't have attorneys on retainer, and we don't know what it means when we're signing off on most of the things related to data privacy that we're signing off on. So I'd like you to keep that in mind, that strong legislation is going to be needed in order to protect consumers. And even legal experts are struggling with this issue. So how can, you know, parents be expected to do this? We're going to need your help to do that. Also, with regard to this recommendation engines, one of the things that I find troubling as a parent, if you take a basic course on data ethics, some of the things that you learn is that data is contextual, that data doesn't describe the whole person. And so if you look at a recommendation engine, children do certain things online. And if you're the receiver of that online information, it doesn't necessarily describe that child. It may be that that child has interests in a science camp or whatever, but it's not going to come out in their online profile. Should they be excluded from receiving that information based on someone's algorithm in a recommendation engine? So I find the whole recommendation engine discussion really troubling, especially related to children and the algorithms that are being used. Because I think children, we want expansive, we want equity, we want them to be open to all kinds of things. We want the child that never showed any interest in music to have that same opportunity. And 'cause they should have a first time, even if they're, you know, 17. And then some of the things that in terms of framing your discussion, I hear a lot of concern about the ed tech companies. I would like you to think about children and their aggregated data and their profile that could be sitting out there somewhere. I think that's the basis that we need to come from in terms of how we're going to make decisions on student data privacy. These ed tech companies, I guarantee you, they're very clever. If they don't have personally identifiable data, they will find ways to create excellent products for people to use. And I think that's the discussion. It's not about whether it's about protecting the student and their aggregated information that might be out there for a lifetime. And just a simple example of that, suppose a student in Beaverton, we have a special program for students that are teen parents, for example. So if the online provider is receiving information and they know that this student now is a teen parent by virtue of being in this program and they have a tag for that, you want to make sure that that tag doesn't then follow that student all around so that 10 years later someone is searching and can say, oh, yes, I see that you were a teen parent. They may or may not want someone to know that information, but that's their personal information that should be protected. So, again, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay, Representative Reardon.
Just wondering, I think it's for two questions for Megan, if I may. Mm-hmm. But so with the different versions of this California law, then are companies producing different versions of the app or the software? Or
in response to the California law? Well, Representative Doherty, Representative Reardon, because the California law hasn't come into effect yet, there are still many discussions happening on how companies are going to respond. There's certainly a fear that the educational, you know, recommendations that could be used are going to be hindered. I think especially as content goes from physical books and as resources become more scarce, especially in the educational setting, lots of content is going the way of, you know, being digitized. And we think that those recommendation engines would be vital in order to expand a student's opportunities. So we're struggling with how to figure out how to keep information exposed. I mean, allow students to be exposed to that information in the new digital world. But because most states have included this in the past legislation, we haven't so far launched any new products or that I know of. I can't speak for the entire industry. I can only speak for, you know, my experience.
And is any of this discussion or the outcome of whatever legislation we produce, will that affect the business proposition in a way that affects the way you generate revenue, and will that be reflected in prices of services back that affect the districts?
And that's a very good question. Representative Doherty, Representative Reardon, I can't answer that. I'm not exactly sure what the right answer to that would be. I mean, I imagine that as things have to be reconfigured, there may be increased costs, but that's just just my prediction, sort of. I don't have a solid basis to tell you decisively.
Won't affect my vote. But
Thank you. Representative McLean.
Okay, well, I want to talk about that a little bit more, because your company is to make educational online lessons, online curriculum, aids, activities, and then you hope that school districts or school units are going to purchase that from you or allow folks to, you know, get that product. So is that what your job is? That's your main job? Or what do you see your main job as being?
Representative Doherty, Representative McLean, TechNet is a trade association of technology companies. We have 70 member companies. Some of those include companies that provide services for educational settings.
Right. Those companies that are part of your 70, their main purpose is to provide educational material.
No, ma'am.
Okay, so tell me what it is.
Many of our companies are the leading innovators. We have a list online. We don't actually have any straight up just purely ed tech companies. These are large information technology companies that may have a section of their company dedicated to educational technologies.
Okay, so The question that was just asked before mine, though, was how do you pay for this? Where do you get your money? How do you make your profit? So if you're not an ed tech, you know, group of 70, what are you, a group of 70? What do you do? What's your product? Well, you've got platforms. I get that. Okay, but what do you do? What's your product? How do you make your money?
Representative Doherty, Representative McLean, I guess I'm not understanding the question. Our companies make many different products.
Like what?
Information services, so IT procurement or IT procurement services, hardware, software, internet media, websites.
Okay.
There's a whole host of companies under our member organization.
Okay, thank you.
So follow up, this might be just one small department in a company that's got 40 departments.
Yeah.
Sure, yes. Representative Doherty, TechNet is just a trade organization
right.
made up of member companies.
Yeah, but one of your member companies could be one part of just a small part of their company, and they might have 40, 50 other products.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I appreciated what you had to say earlier, so thank you. And I think what your approach, correct me if I'm wrong, is just that you're here to represent those who offer the services to all of the districts. And just to be the voice of those folks. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Hack. That is correct.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Greta.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is, maybe tying in with some of these other things. How much is this information, this data worth out on the black market if someone, we're concerned about information here that companies want to take and advertise with if they could get it, you know, and I'm just wondering if it's hacked or whatever or passed down through some employee that's a little crooked, you know. Is this information worth a lot of money to people out there that are looking to sell to kids?
Representative Doherty, Representative Barreto, there are already legal frameworks in place to protect that type of information. The amendments we're offering would not allow the sale of student information for advertising in any way.
Well, thank you. I understand that. I mean, that's the whole gist of this thing. But if it accidentally gets out, if it gets hacked or whatever, I mean, would there be a tendency to try and extract this information for that purpose?
I don't believe so, but like I said, there are already legal implications if data is hacked or stolen. There are already laws protecting that.
Okay, Representative Frederick.
At the request of my colleague next to me, Chair Doherty, let's not use hacked.
Okay. I was going to cue in and say I was being impugned.
I apologize.
Yes. We are not just supposed to impugn our colleagues, and I guess we did unintentionally. So.
But I do have something else I wanted to. There's an aspect that strikes me that I think we need to really make clear. The idea of a 12-year-old clicking onto a platform or software or whatever and saying, yes, you can have my information, bothers me. Because it can follow them for a long time, and they may have no idea what this is about. So that's part of the effort is privacy for those youngsters and how we craft that so that their information is not being used 10 to 15 years from now, is not available in the case of a company going bankrupt. If you look on OLIS, you'll find an article from today that I put on, yesterday, mm-hmm. dealing with a company that went that suddenly closed their doors after having millions of dollars in money coming to them from the Race to the Top effort. They just suddenly closed their doors, and no one knows what happens to the information that company managed to bring together, and it was testing information primarily. But this is the concern that I have, and as we look at at these bills, or this bill, that's what I want to make sure that we're dealing with. The commercialization is something I dealt with when I was working for the Portland schools, where, in fact, companies, this is really before we had a lot of that data available, but we had people who wanted to have as much information as possible about elementary school students so that they could sell, so that they could track them, so that they could provide, as they said, educational proposals to them. They were questionable in terms of their educational value, but they managed to wrap it up into what they called an educational issue. So I'm concerned about this and how we actually track this and what we can do with it. But I'm pleased that we've gotten this far with it. That's for sure.
Thank you very much.
I want to explain what I was trying to get at, because I don't think we got there, either one of us. But as a teacher in a classroom with 42 kids last year on computers or iPads trying to research for a 10-page research paper and a 10-minute speech, I can only watch so much on each screen as we're, you know, dealing with our class period. And so what concerns me about this consent, you know, whether it be a 12-year-old or a 17-year-old, I don't know necessarily, am I going to have a little something on their foreheads that said parent consent, you know, for something. And I don't know if the parent would consent to that particular thing that's arising up there on the screen or anything else. So it, to me, the consent issue is just problematic for the classroom, you know, type of setting that you're in, because you've got a lot of kids and a lot of computers and a lot of different research topics and a lot of different screens that come up all the time. And so the adult in the room would have to know for each student exactly what their parent had consented for. And so that's an issue of just logistics that sounds like a nightmare to me. And so that's my issue with the one item that you said. And like I was trying to get at was that, you know, your product, whatever it is with whatever company, you know, in your trade association here, if those folks have a contract, like Representative Wilson was saying, again, I have to know a little bit more about what's happening in that classroom with each individual student than that contract, that one concept was supposed to cover, because there are search engines out there that bring up other ones, that bring up other ones, that bring up other ones. And so, again, it has the hole in the wall, or the wall in the first place, seems to be really important to protecting students from being exposed to things that we don't know for sure their parents would appreciate. And especially in a setting where you're in a public school, where you've got a school district that has liability and you've got teachers that have got liability and you've got a lot of kids in your class. So I'm just trying to understand the relationship between the contract, you know, your trade organization, and the logistics of actually functioning in a classroom. So that was what I was trying to say.
May I? Representative Doherty, Representative McLean, thank you for the clarification. To address your concern about a teacher not necessarily knowing who has given consent, I believe that would be tied to whatever unique login or username that a student has. So it wouldn't necessarily be something that a teacher would have to, you know, keep tabs on. And I think that would ease some of those concerns that. But then the second thing is, you know, that content is pretty highly regulated within the educational setting. There are technologies built in to prevent, you know, websites that should not be accessed. But I don't think that those are, I mean, really addressed in this.
Well, just to react to that a little bit, I mean, you know, you were talking about Macbeth, you know, and there's Romeo and Juliet, and there's, you know, Merchant of Venice, and there's a lot of other things that relate to things that we might be studying in class. And sometimes it's hard to focus, you know, certain ages at certain times with certain subjects anyway. And so the whole idea that you're giving them all of these choices out there, where we really may have kind of a focused lesson or a focused experience, and they can find those things at home and on their personal, you know, devices when they're outside the classroom. But when we're in the classroom, we only have so much time.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay, with not, thank you very much for testifying. Okay, those are the only folks we had signed up to testify on Senate Bill 187A. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on it? Okay, see none. I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 187A. And that's it. That's it for today. We were going to do a couple of bills, but I know Representative Springer wasn't going to be here, so we'll do that on Wednesday. So with that, I adjourn the House Committee on Education. Thank you very much.
that, I adjourn the House Committee on Education. Thank you very much.